Hello, listeners. Welcome to Inner and Outer Reality, In Reality and Outside. As always, I'm your guest, your host.
I've been taking over this thing now.
Sean Penalver. And with us today is our guest,
Cody Myers.
Cody Myers. Cody, I do have some questions now that I've been asking my guests. Do you have any answers to life?
Probably not any answers anyone wants to hear, to be honest. I'm very, I don't know, I feel like we're kind of just here on accident.
Why do you say that?
It just all feels like a giant game.
What kind of? I can argue that in some theories, in ways, that this is a simulation in many ways. So, like, there's the simulation theory of essentially that, like, there's three arguments to simulation theory. Either they're given enough time, humans in our lifespan are never able to create simulation, right? Like, and so then it's unlikely that we exist in a simulation if we can't do it, right? Then there's the second piece, which is humans advance so far ahead that we eventually are able to simulate the universe, but we choose not to out of moral obligation.
Right.
Because then we would basically be causing all the suffering and everything, but on a universal scale. You know, we'd be doing it ourselves to another infinite amount of life forms. And then there's the third possibility that we do eventually be able to create simulations. And then if that is possible, then the likelihood of us being in a simulation ourselves becomes almost 100%.
Right.
But then additionally, there is the semantic of simulation of essentially like not being in a like VR kind of thing or a simulation thing, but essentially an imitation of imitations. And so kind of what Baudrillard, the philosopher, talked about, kind of like the Matrix scenario, but not within like a Matrix, but that in our lives, we tried to simulate, or the media tried to simulate what reality means. And then now we live in a simulation of that simulation, basically kind of a, an imitation of imitation.
Right.
And so really our lives are kind of simulated in that way. But in my argument of if you're a mistake or not, I think literally every atom to its core and beyond that, into territory what I call funk, is essentially here by purpose to essentially expand on what it means to just be you. And so,
so that's what I meant to say. I meant like when I said it was a game too, it's just like not like you're gonna get a prize or anything at the end. Like the prize would be to make another simulation. I think it's just people overthink it. It's just like live by morals, but just enjoy the time.
Yeah.
Whether you believe in however, you know, this ends.
Yeah.
Just, so many people worry about everything every single day, and they're not even worrying about themselves.
They don't understand that the prize, the metaphorical prize, is that you are here. That is it. You have already won, essentially.
Yeah.
In this spanse time of infinite, which most people can't even comprehend, the fact that you even exist is significant. And so that is already a prize in itself. And then, like, when you try to find further meaning in that, that's when it gets super difficult. And so, like, in my understanding and my investigation and all these things, I think really the key is to just be, or what, I can't remember the philosopher's name, is called Dasein, which just means to be there, something that just is there. And to quickly reel you in onto what funk theory is in my ideology and what I've kind of founded, essentially, so funk is like the what's a great way to say this? Funk is essentially what existence exists within and is constructed of. And so let's break down matter. Like, matter is atoms. Atoms are neutrons and electrons and 99% space. Then when you break down those neutrons and electrons, they become quarks and bosons and, you know, all these things. And then when you break down those things, we don't even know yet because we can't look that small yet.
Right.
But they're constructed of something.
Yeah.
And so that essentially is funk. And then when you discover what those things are and you put words to them, then whatever is farther next, it just becomes more funk. And there's always just another level of funk. Yeah. And it also goes the inverse of that. So if my fist is the observable universe, or even all of the universe, it's expanding into something, and it exists within something. Funk.
Yeah.
And if we ever discover what that exists within, then that, again, it still exists within this greater thing, which is funk. And so everything and anything is just this collection of funk, or what I describe as funk. And so, kind of that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that's, if anything that I believe in, it's more so like something like that, where if you would go through funk and keep breaking it down smaller and smaller and smaller, just say one day you could finally break it down, you would just, you know, get a tiny little microscope, you would just see us right here having this conversation, and you would just because, go, yeah, holy shit, and then you know someone else is looking down on you.
Kind of,
yeah.
It's
just, that's what I think. That's kind of like that third simulation theory, too. Like, I always think this, it's, I think God, I'm sure you've talked religion on this podcast before.
Mm.
I think God is a noun, so it doesn't have to be a person, place. It could be a person, place, thing, or idea.
Yeah.
So in that sense, everyone has God, and everyone has something because they think or believe in something. And I think that it's also like the Big Bang, science, right? They're like, oh, I believe in science. Well, that is your God. So I think that when you go, like, my biggest question, whether it's, this is why I'm kind of in between everything, because whether the Big Bang or religion. I'm sorry, religion or science, the Big Bang or God, I just will always ask, but what was before that?
And that's where funk theory comes in.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it is a combination of both. Both of those things are just constructs of funk.
Yes.
And so that's why metaphysically I understand funk to be the scientific God rather than the religious God, because there is the religious idea of what God is, and that it's this being and stuff. And that's what most people, like atheists and everything, will argue against, that there's this being that makes these decisions and does all these things. But really, when you get into the metaphysics of it, it's just existence being.
Yeah.
And it's just this funk that is this collected experience. And when you reach into it, kind of like, because like when you look at all religions, I can't think of the word that I'm looking for, but essentially, like, there are truths within all religions because they're all coming from something. It's all structuralism. All these things came from these ideas that were built upon and expanded on, and none of them were right 100% absolutist, but they had right parts in it. They were getting there, you know. It's kind of like science. It's like science.
Yeah.
You start off wrong and you learn more as you go. But there's only a few things that we know. And at this point, this is where we're at. I'm kind of tangenting. I lost where I was going.
It was good up until then.
Yeah. But that is kind of my metaphysical. And that was one of the other questions. It's like, what is your understanding of the concept of God?
So, in the sense, so like, like I said, I'm very open-minded, and I'm just here to enjoy everything. So, like, I'll go to church with some friends and family. I'll just talk science with other people. But either way, it's, you know, the big thing is with scientists, like, well, we had the Big Bang. We were all in the, like, what is it? The whole universe was inside of a pin needle or something.
Yeah, or even smaller than that.
Right, essentially, I mean, it would just be all that. But I have to go, what was there before that? How did all that get there? Yeah. All of that is so small, right? But how did all that get there? I've never gotten a clear-cut answer. Also, you'll never know.
Well, and Big Bang is, again, it's just a theory as well.
Right.
Because we don't know for sure.
So it's easier for me to think that that God or the metaphysical or anything, that instead of being one person or one event, is a long-term event.
Like, it's all of it.
Yeah. So for me, this is what I honestly do think, is that something happened, whether God was created or the Big Bang happened, and then all of this transpired after that. And then we are going to do something and burn out as an entire, not even species, society. You just end all, be all. Everything will explode.
Entropy.
And then we'll pull each other back together, and then we'll go back. It's just a loop. So it's easier for me to understand that the endless circle is God versus a single person or one big event.
Yeah, because it's all collected, again, in this funk.
Yeah.
And then that funk, it probably exists within a greater kind of circle.
So instead of saying it's always been there, like God or like the Big Bang, you know, the particles before that, just saying, like, it will always be there, or it will always happen. That's so much, I can understand that way more. That makes more sense to me.
It goes into the argument of essentialism and existentialism. And essentialism is the belief that essence came before existence. And existentialism is the opposite, that existence came before essence. And really, we don't know. Really, in my funk theory, I think they're hand in hand. I think literally, like, we can't even imagine what existed before it. But I think that they both, at some point, just came to be or something, because we're here. We know that these things came to be just because we're sitting right here in this moment.
Yeah.
And so, just like you're saying in this loop, with the infinite amount of time, a 0.00000000001 chance, percent chance, becomes 100%. Because that chance eventually will happen.
Yeah.
And statistically, when that event happens, it is now 100%.
Yes.
And so it is very likely that we were sitting right here at this moment before, just at an incomprehensible amount of time ago.
Yeah.
Like, probably over a Googleplex of years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, however long it takes for the universe to reform itself. And when you look at the whole grand scheme of the universe, like, let's argue in the favor of the Big Bang Theory and say that everything did happen in this flash, and that eventually everything will suck back down into that small little bit again and then cause another flash. Really, those flashes are happening like...
Yeah, it means nothing to the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're only experiencing our section of time.
Yeah.
And that's just mind-blowing.
I think that this... My whole, like, loop theory, but it's another theory too, but... I think that will, it draws from all possible religions and aspects of life too. People believe in like reincarnation or like parallel universes. So I thought the reincarnation, spiritual, parallel universes is scientific, right?
I think they both fit hand in hand.
I think they're both pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
So you put them together, you get the loop where it's like, they say when you have deja vu, it's parallel universes colliding. That's you're thinking about something that happened similar.
Yeah.
I think it's just, that's what happened the last time you were there.
Yeah. You're kind of recalling it.
And then that's the same thing as reincarnation. You're reincarnated probably as yourself. Or, I mean, sure, you could, whatever, like, you'll, as something else, but it's just, you'll be everything by the end of it.
So here's my metaphysical view of reincarnation. When we die, like, so right now, we're alive, right?
Yeah.
We're transferring ourselves into literally everything that is around us. Like, we're transferring ourselves into each other right now, mentally and physically. And we're, like, getting each other's information. We're collecting each other. And so now that we have met, the moment that I saw you on Facebook, our separateness interconnected.
Yeah.
And we were still interconnected just unknowingly after that, right? Yeah. But now we can never, ever remove this connection. It's always going to be permanent. And so we're building into this, and we're growing into this, and we're doing that with everything around us, like literally anything that we either know or don't know about. And so when you die, like physically, your atoms just spread out into the rest of it. And even though you as an individual are no longer conscious to be around with it, those atoms and that funk still spread out, and you are being reincarnated into the next lives of over billions and trillions of things. You become the earth around you. You become the wind. You become the ashes that you become. You become, like, let's say that your body melds with a tree or a plant. You're now that living plant. That is you.
Yeah.
And so that is kind of reincarnation through science, through metaphysics and life. And so, again, if we do this loop theory, like, you spread out to become all these things, and you've also been doing it throughout your whole life, you know? And so, like, through however long, 100 years, that is your influence, and that is, it's multiplied forever, you know? And so, one could argue that deja vu is your sense of not just you being there before, but your aspect of, not just your past life, but since, if you argue that, like, we're spreading out into these things, that we can view each other through the funk, that, like, that deja vu is kind of you remembering from not just yourself, but from all the things around you and the atoms itself, the structures, just being like, oh, I remember this, you know, like, because I think that we are all again, when it comes down to funk, we're all just funk. And so even though you and I are different and individuals and separate, we're still that collected force of energy just feeding into this giant greater funk. And we're teaching it what it is to be like us, because it does and doesn't know, you know. But now it knows what it is like for you to be sitting there talking to me and me to be sitting here talking to you and this table to be right here, you know, holding up our drinks and the microphone. And without these things being here, again, that's why I say being present is the most important thing of existence, because now all of these things are just being present in this moment, just doing their thing, you know. And without it, without this table, our entire reality would be different. We would exist in a different, quote unquote, simulation.
Yeah. Do you you heard of the theory of morphic resonance?
Go on.
I can't remember. Rupert Drake, I think is his name.
That rings a bell.
British guy. His theory is that objects hold memories.
Yes. Yeah. Like, what are they called? I think visual microphones and stuff as well. But yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
And there is also scientific proofs in some things like that. Like, you can recall sound out of objects.
They also did a test. Rupert talks about this in some interviews, that he did a study with baby chicks, right? And so this is also, like, not even just objects hold memory, but there's generational memories. So he has these chicks, and they show them, like, a blue light, like, in a box. Show them a blue light. Blue light means you get fed or something. And then the red light comes on, and there's, like, an electrode on the end of it, and they go up to try eating it, and they get shot.
Yeah.
Then those chicks grow up, and they have their own chickens, their own chicks as well, and they do the same thing. But at some point, they stop the red light. They don't show one generation the red light. Then they get to, like, the third generation. They bring back the red light. Red light turns on. None of them go to it because they know exactly what happened.
It's evolution, essentially. It's like you pass down this genetic information.
Yeah.
And it really is mind-blowing because it's like...
But evolution says it has to be a long time of this, right? Like, it's like we had flippers at one point, and now we don't need them. But it wasn't like one day you just woke up and you got a kid and just, the hell? You don't have any flippers. What are you, just a hand kid?
Yeah.
It has to take a long time, and it gets phased out. Well, that's what evolution is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is, like, the idea that's just, like, that's so crazy that it was just overnight. Yeah. Not overnight, but over one generation was just, like, don't do that.
And with chicks and chickens, that's probably, like, within 20 years.
Yeah, much smaller lifespan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then just blow that up with humans. It's probably just a larger scale, you know?
Yeah, but in the grand scheme of things, in this loop theory...
That's just...
We are the chickens. It doesn't matter.
Yes, and
our time span does not matter at all.
It's the same guy who talked about Dasein that I mentioned earlier that talks about the Overman. And so that what the Overman to humans is what we are to apes and monkeys, or what we believe that humans used to be, Neanderthals and stuff, or even earlier than that. And so given probably like a couple hundred years to maybe even a few, like 1,000 years, depending on like... Because technology is advancing at such a rate, and humans have changed in the last 100 years, you know, like... significantly than what we were. The Overman is theoretically like approaching faster and faster, and so like there is whatever's next is coming, you know. Humans are not the last step, and it's arrogant to think that we are the last step or even the greatest things in the universe or even on Earth, like, because we're just literally animals that can think. We're just conscious.
So that's the whole thing of like the evolutionary change to where we were Neanderthals at one point in time. And that's, I haven't read all of the Bible, and I just know in bits and pieces, but I believe there was a species before us called, like, Leviathan or something. There was a species before that were just the most awful aspects of humans put together. And then they burned out, or I think God took them and banished them to somewhere. That's what happened.
Or something like that.
So now we are these. We're the second or maybe the third or fourth Mach.
Yeah.
Why would we be the last one?
And, yeah, and also there's... the theories of like the Anunnaki and stuff, and that humans are just we were created as slaves to like harvest gold and stuff or something like that for aliens. Okay. And then they just left, and that's why we have like signs of the pyramids of like alien contact and everything, because that's why they were worshiping them as gods, because we were just put here from greater beings that were human-like and humanoid. but we were essentially just ants for them.
Yeah, we could also be invasive species on Earth, and that's why we keep fucking it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were planted here.
Because we totally are. Humans are very plague-like and virus-like. And that's why there are some theories that, like, I can't remember the exact theory name, that aliens just don't want to contact us because how harmful we are to each other.
Yeah.
And
but it's always, that's the thing, too, like, we were talking about earlier when it was, like, you just remember the Pythagorean theorem announces a joke. It's kind of just like, hey, you remember that? And we all just laugh about it. Yeah. It's just like, that's so sad that we did that.
Yeah.
That's essentially the same thing now.
For all of humanity.
Yeah, it's just like, or like, we were just created, and then it's just like, oh, no, that sucks. Why would we want to come see that?
Because, I mean, imagine, and we discussed this earlier, imagine a point in time where technology is able to, like, Neuralinks. If you've heard about those and stuff. Yeah. Like, imagine now that Neuralinks, like, we can just sense and feel and be with each other, like, and we just instantaneously know and understand, rather than having to discuss things for hundreds of years through semantics and through philosophy and stuff. We just instantly get it because now we're all this collective unit, but with our brains, just instantly connecting and understanding because you don't have to use language anymore. You can just feel it.
Yeah, we touched on it too in the last episode, but like, I don't like that. I feel like you miss out on a lot of things with that. Even if you can just understand exactly how I'm feeling about something, you're missing out on life now. It's like when you're having a conversation, I hate smartphones and I hate this aspect of them. When you're having a conversation with someone, like, who was that guy? Or who was in this one movie? I think it was this person. And someone goes, no, it was this person. You're like, no, I think it was. And then they go and they Google it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, nope, see, you're right. Or no, you were wrong. And that's the end of that conversation. But now how good could that conversation have gotten if you just did not have that access, or you just were like, don't look at your phone?
It's the 90s.
Yeah.
Or before, pre-90s.
Sure, yeah, like, that's
what it was like growing up.
Yeah, super millennial of me just be describing what already happened. But, like, either way, I hate that we have this now because I have a bunch of friends that will just sit there and I hate once in the conversation aspect when we're trying to actually have a moment and bond as people. And it's just, like, they'll just axe it right away. And then nothing's worse. Like, if I'm just as someone that I'm kind of friends with and we're talking and we have this conversation and then they just pull out their phone and do that, I'm like, all right, now I have no interest in probably being friends with you or just doing, because I know how it's going to end every time.
They predicted this in the 50s, 60s, that this would happen with technology, and that essentially we would lose ourselves into it. And I can't remember the exact terminology, but it's basically like, it's like toxic technology, you know, where like we're not afraid to hide behind technology because humans get more aggressive when they're able to put on a mask. And technology is that mask. And that's why you see, like, internet bullying and everything.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to just type something online and hit enter than it is to say it to your face.
Yeah, they also they don't have the instant repercussions.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Well, Einstein had a quote like that. Wasn't Einstein that had a quote that it was just, like, the end of mankind will be technology or something?
Or maybe.
Maybe I'm just misremembering it. Maybe I seem like a dork now because I'm just like, it was like, no, that was actually Ben Affleck that said that. Or just something ridiculous. Did you ever read Fahrenheit 451?
I think so.
It's usually like a high school book
that
you read. I didn't read many books in school. I just hated it. Also, if I'm sitting down to read, I'd rather write. That's my big struggle.
That used to be me as well.
But Fahrenheit 451, I mean, I can't remember the exact time when it came out, but I think it's old, like the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And I think Ray Bradbury wrote it. But he described a lot of things that we have now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he described, like, smart TVs and then AirPods and a whole bunch of other shit in times where, like, wireless technology was not a thing.
Yeah.
And the whole, like, now where the whole book is firefighters go out and they burn the books and says you can't read them. We still go through information cleanses like that now.
It's a kind of a form of structuralist prediction. So, like, structuralism is essentially, like, why things are the way they are. And how they got there. And so, like, I'm still trying to comprehend structuralism myself. And so, like, the way I'm about to explain it isn't absolute. This is just my understanding of it. But, like, it's essentially, like, why we are the way we are. Like, why this table is right here. Someone decided that this table needed to be here for some purpose, right?
Yeah.
But even before that, the table had to be created, like, it had to be built. And so, like, I'm tangenting and like losing myself, but like essentially, like it's just those predictions. Like he wrote all these things, and they become so a part of culture that they became culture. Like they influenced the way reality happened.
Yeah.
And so, had they never been written about, would they have happened?
Well, that's the same thing about asking why with the funk going backwards and just going smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Why do we need this table? Why was this table invented? Why was someone, a machinist that built this table? Why did someone have that person?
Yeah.
Why did those people have that? Why are we even here? Just, it goes all the way forever. It's like if you're going in the past, you ask why. If you're going forward, you ask what.
Yeah.
And then it just comes back around one day, what will find why.
Yeah, I agree.
And then you said earlier, too, existence versus essence?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a chicken and egg. It's just a loop. It's just, you can, so it's what came first, existence into essence or essence into existence, and it would just be two words of arrows, you know, doing like, those like little recycle arrows. Yeah, the yin yangs are better, but like the little, like the little, just into each other, and it's just, yes.
Yeah.
It's just both of them.
Yeah. Because a thing, why I think that it's something else entirely, again, going into funk, it's just funk, until we have a better word for it, is humans have a big issue with binary opposition. We like to put things into, it's either this or that.
Yeah.
It's either black or white.
Yeah.
You're either sane or you're insane.
Yeah.
And these were all things that were just really constructed out of science and trying to understand things. And so it's like, oh, if this is this, then it is not that. But it is entirely kind of both of those things at the same time. It's a superposition. And then when you try to label it as, oh, it's all the way on this side, then you get on this balance beam of absolutism. And again, the binary opposition. And so, like, that's why it's like you can't go too far left on one end or it'll imbalance the other.
Yeah.
And so everything is kind of, I would say, on, like, this circle balance beam. And everything is in its place perfectly to create this balance. And if you remove any of those things, even a chip, it removes the entire balance.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like you can't ever be going too far on one side or an absolute or the other. And so, again, I'm not currently caught up in modern philosophy. I'm only in kind of postmodernism right now.
Okay.
Which is around, like, 1970s and such.
Okay.
And so I don't know if we're past non-binary, binary opposition or what, but that is a huge thing in the last, I think it was around like the 1940s when really things like started becoming, it's this or that, or heterosexual versus homosexual, you know, like back in the day, they didn't just have those things, like kind of dealing with like sickness. It was like, I don't have a great example, but it was like, they just described it differently. You know, it was just a whole completely different description and experience.
Yeah,
but now
you were okay or you were not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even before that, like, it wasn't even, like, a question of you're okay or you're not. It just, like, I don't know how to describe it philosophically or through phenomenology. But now it is, you're okay or you're not.
That's how we interpret it. But, yeah, we just had different words for it or different feelings for it back then. I think that binary opposition is a primal defense mechanism.
Go on.
I feel like before even science, and we were just even... just say cavemen. I mean, they were experimenting with things out of science, but just before it was written and collected, I think it was, you are with us or you are not. And that's the tribal aspect with it. And it's just comfortability kills.
Yeah.
I've said that for everything. You got to get out of your comfort zone. Comfortability kills. It's so easy to get tied down and just be like, well, I'm okay with this. And I know if I take away one of these things, it's going to be hard. And then something could happen. We're also always scared of the inevitable and unknown.
Yeah.
It's like, we know this will happen, or we think we know this will happen, or we just don't know it'll happen, so, like, I'm just going to stay here. So comfortability kills, and I also think it's like, you got comfortable with it. It's also not the sense, like, comfortability kills, like, just you don't know what would happen. You do know, it's like, it's tribal, too. Comfortability will kill because those tribes will kill you. Does that make sense?
Because if you step outside of your...
if you draw allegiance
the wrong way... if you step outside of the zone...
of comfort, you yeah. could get attacked by a bear or another tribe or anything. Well, so
yeah, that's the binary opposition too. I am not a bear. That is a bear.
Yeah.
Well, you also don't know what's going to play out.
Yeah.
But comfortability will kill if you just box in and just have the two things always.
And a lot of philosophers will argue in that favor as well, that yeah. content and comfort is the most boring life. Because yeah. if you're just comfortable all the time, you won't do anything. You won't go anywhere. You'll just be.
Yeah,
which is not a wrong thing.
No.
In the grand scheme of anything. But as far as just existence goes, it is the most boring way to exist.
Yeah.
Because we talked about this one of my previous podcasts, but like imagine like we never took the comfort or time to create bricks or wood. We would still live in huts, you know?
Yeah.
If we were just content with that. This is what we're comfortable with, so we're just going to do it for the rest of our lives, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to branch out of your comfort zone to really do anything.
Well, then you also get to the question, can something be the best of what that was?
Yeah, that's subjective.
Yeah, it's just like, well, wood was good, but bricks are better.
Yeah.
Stronger, or they last longer, they don't rot. It's just like, okay, well then what's after that? We make houses out of concrete or something, or we make them out of, just all these other things. And I don't know. I think that's more of just your comfortability factor and what you prefer, your preference. I like the look of wood versus bricks.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a wood house. Especially if you know that wood can burn.
Yeah.
And you can lose everything to it, but it's like, man, I'm willing to take that chance.
Yeah.
But that's being comfortable and uncomfortable too.
Yeah. And you're in this constant state of it. But it's still not a binary of comfort and discomfort. It is the overall experience. It's the full collection. Yeah. What do you believe progress is?
I don't know. I don't even think... Well, I could argue what progress is. Like, just... not even what I believe progress is, just what is progress. Like... that's... I think so differently, and I know that already. And I could be right, I could be wrong. Chances are I'm probably wrong. But also, I'm wrong because more people say that I am wrong.
It's a mixture of both. Right. It's a superposition.
I remember in, we had a government class in high school, and there's one girl... And it was then. It was the same thing. It was you're with us, you're against us, because they made us take a test over what side you lean on politically.
Uh-huh.
And I was one of two libertarians, or more centrally focused, but more so libertarian than anyone else. So I found myself siding more of like Republicans or conservatives in that classroom, just because there's more aspects of conservatism that I lean with, but the ones that I do with liberalism, they're heavier, so they balance out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was ridiculous because we would do debates, and these guys were, I am this 100%. And then the other people were, I am this 100%. And then I would be with them 75%. And then, oh, well, then 25% of everything I'm saying contradicts. So, like, I'm with them. Or 25% of 100% I'm saying. And then vice versa. Some arguments, I'd be on that side, and they would be on this side. I remember one conversation was just like laws. And what makes a citizen? Someone said, abiding by the law. And I said, that's stupid. Because it's the same thing, how I'm being outcast because I believe in most of what you say and most of what you say, and you're going to argue that I'm not a good person because I don't agree with you all the way. But I'm like, law is just what a collective people have decided should be how yeah. we live. I'm like, what if we say orange shirts are stupid? You can't wear an orange shirt. I don't know if I was wearing an orange shirt. I think I wasn't. I just called out someone in the back room, which is kind of funnier in my opinion. But I'm like, that's now law.
Yeah.
And then she was like, well, but she also wanted to try arguing that should be law. And I'm like, but why should it be law? So I don't even know what progress is. I think that we're just going to stumble and fall. But it's just, what are you trying to get to? And also, why is this happening?
Yeah.
What's the benefits of it? I don't think progress is just... Progress is subjective, because it's just like, oh, you look how far we've come with it. Like, I'm a car guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've progressed with fuel economy, but we sacrificed aesthetics. The new cars look like shit. Old cars were cool.
Yeah.
They felt better. They looked nicer. So maybe it's
they're trying to be this future image. Kind yeah. of thing.
Maybe every time you step, maybe every time you put one forward towards progress, you step back one time towards recession, mm-hmm. and you just gotta start turning.
Yeah.
You do that every single time.
Yeah.
I have no idea, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just all subjective.
That's a great answer.
Yeah. Because what they're progressing towards may mean nothing to me. You know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about this aspect of what they believe in.
Yeah.
But what I try for, and I try progressing in, they are probably like, I don't care. So, like, I just think it's stupid. I think that's progress is probably more of this binary opposition. Yeah. Where it's like, we're doing this, but also, why are we doing this?
And then again, going back to the scenario of, like, imagine that you're back in that room with all these people in these arguments, and that you're able to, instead of having these lengthy arguments, able to just understand each other.
Yeah.
What do you think would happen, come out of that? What do you think those would be like? You know, like, it's even hard to imagine and comprehend. Because, like, just imagine that, like, everyone in that room is suddenly just able to connect like they were online, you know, but even to a higher degree. And now you're all just, like, thinking at the speed of thought together, collectively.
I don't think it's going to happen in that kind of environment, though, because especially with how they prefaced that, they made us take that test, and it decided. This test decided what your team was.
And it's so dividing.
Yeah, but it's also like, so I think it's Montana does this. I mean, people are like, oh, he's talking about politics. Politics and economics are everything in the world. It's politics, economics, and math. That's everything together. Politics doesn't have to be just you're a politician. You mean, if you're being diplomatic and you're being a man of the people, or you're just, or a woman of the people, or you're just being able to socialize and try to maybe make progress or somewhat about something, or just be a human, that's pretty much politics.
Yeah.
That's what politics was founded on and was supposed to be, and now everyone's got a skewed image of it because that's what it's turned into, right?
Yeah.
I think math is probably the most universal language, and everything comes out of it. Even sound and frequency can come out of math.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's Montana was trying to say is, like, for their local government, they don't tell you who's on the ballot and what side they're running on. They just tell you it's, these are the beliefs. These are what they want to change. This is what they try to change. This is what they've done. It's more like a resume without a name.
Hmm.
I think it's Montana. It's somewhere northwest of here.
That's interesting.
And I think that's how we should do most things. Because if you take away the side, I think you would see a lot of people just move. And it doesn't have to be about politics. It can be about anything.
Yeah.
Music in general. It's like, if you read lyrics, you have no idea how that song sounds. So you could really like rap, and you usually, I mean, you may hate rap. You're more of like, I don't know, a folk blues guy or something. But you read it, you're like, I like that. And then you hear how it sounds, you're like, well, I can see it now. Maybe you might have more of an appreciation for it now that you see it, you know, taken away in that aspect. I think a lot of people would just all collectively just be together and live more harmoniously and just be better people.
Yeah,
if we took away every single possible, it's just the binary opposition. If it just, why do things have to be this and that?
Yeah,
you know,
because a huge thing that is happening with current society and politics is that it's whoever has the most money to put their face out there and get their name shown is going to be the winner. Yeah. And so I think that what you're saying of, like, if we get these names out of here and we go more towards policies, and you're voting on these policies, then it's less a popularity contest and more you're actually getting into what's important.
It's like when I was telling you I was in a band and we had not done a single gig. We jammed, we played, we practiced, we hung out, and we had that interview with a magazine company and they published our interview. But we weren't really a band. We just had better marketing than other people did.
Yeah.
So there's other real bands out there that probably deserve that, that did deserve that chance more than we did. But you're not going to hear about them because they just don't know how to socialize, network, and market.
Yeah.
And we got that, and that's hilarious. And then how many people are in our world right now making decisions for a group of people that just had better marketing, and they don't have any... Maybe they don't even believe in anything themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not even real.
Yeah.
Like, it just... Yeah.
Well, people get into this argument that, like, we're being manipulated and controlled by these higher-ups and these people, like, this collective control. And who knows? Maybe that's possible. But really what a lot of philosophers argue is that, like, it's just normal people doing what they believe is right. Yeah. And that they think that this is the way that things go, and they were, you know, like, and that is what their structuralism and their funk taught them to do, you know. And so they just fall into that simulation, and they just, you know, imitate what they believe reality is, and it gets into where we are now. It just leads into each other. And so, like, is there a solution? Is there progress from that? Like, it's such a broad discussion. And almost, it seems impossible, you know, to break from. And is the goal even to break from that? Yeah. You know, like.
Also, with reference to the loop, progress is not a thing.
Because it'll all unprogress eventually, and so it's like endless. Yeah,
it's just there's it's all it's just there.
it's just entropy and intaxy. So like,
yeah,
things drive into chaos, and then eventually that chaos finds its way into anti-chaos.
Right.
And then it just happens over and over again. It just back and forth in waves and in random waves.
There's also a theory too. It was like, I mean, it's not just a theory; it's a saying. But it's hard times create tough people. Tough people create easy times. Easy times create weak people. Weak people create hard times.
Well, yeah, endless loop.
And that's an endless loop as well.
Yeah,
and that's why I think everything is.
Yeah.
I mean, that could also be... So, like you said, you mentioned it was waves. It's waves and troughs. Everything is up and down. It's not, and that's frequency as well. That's not just one continuous line. It's not linear. It's not going to be... That's where you get your, you know, your crossovers from. It's not... Nothing is a parallel line.
Yeah.
It just seems parallel. And then you look at... You expand it. It's going to be up and down, up and down. That's everything, too. That's going to be what progress is.
And that falls into... So essentially, there's always going to be an antithesis and the thesis. And the thesis is essentially what's taking advantage of the antithesis. So, like, let's say, like, past governments would be the thesis, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, the antithesis is like, we're tired of this. And so they branch up, they, you know, riot or whatever, they take over, and they reach a synthesis. And so now they're on the same page, but every time over all of human history... The thesis, the synthesis eventually just becomes another antithesis and thesis.
Yeah.
And it's forever. It's always going to be like that.
Yeah.
And so trying to reach this point of eternal synthesis seems like a moot point, but it seems like the thing that we're always doing. You know, we're always trying to reach that synthesis and then just form another antithesis and thesis.
I think just if you could say what life looks like, it would just be like a silhouette of a koosh ball or something, where it's like it's almost round, but it has all these ups and downs throughout the whole thing, and that's it, just a shadow of one.
It'd be an interdimensional shadow.
Yeah.
Which this is just a random, fun thing to think about, but like so, a cube is the shadow of a fourth dimensional cube. So, like, you know how a square is a shadow of a cube?
Yeah.
And the shadow of a square would be a one-dimension thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so, essentially, like, if you were to look at a cube, that is the shadow of what a four-dimensional object would look like. I think that's fun to think about.
Yeah.
Because we can't even comprehend what a fourth-dimensional cube would look like. But a cube is... imagine seeing a shadow of a cube. And it's just like, oh, that's a cube. But no, it's just, like, the shadow of this thing we can't even comprehend.
Well, that's how I do comedy, too. It starts with something that we all know, and then it's you ask a question that's uncomfortable, and then you try to relate it back to it.
Yeah.
That's what it is in general, too. It's all about perspective. But, yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah, but if you can visualize a cube and a light pointed at it, and then the square is the shadow behind it, what's holding the light, or what is even this light? And what that's a scarier question, is what is the light first? Not even what is supposed to be... from its casting of the cube, you know, cube is this shadow. Then what is this object? What's the light that's shining onto that?
And that's what some philosophers in the podcast I listen to philosophize this. That's what one of the things he mentioned is, like, existence is kind of like a flashlight shining in the darkness, and the existence is the light. Existence is still within this thing, but, like, where's that light coming from? And, like, what's causing it? And what are the shadows that it's... what are those doing, you know? Like, it's just fun to think about.
I would argue that eventually that shadow is going to be the light.
Yeah.
It's just
they go hand in hand.
But the color spectrum, that you'll get to the very end of it, but the color spectrum always... It's not even a spectrum. It's just because it's on a flat piece of surface. It's a color wheel.
Yeah.
You know,
but it's more like a light wheel now.
Sure, it's a light wheel, but either way, it's going to come back around. So at one point, this seems like a dark color. Well, you can see how it's going to be a lighter color eventually.
Yeah.
So that's probably what that shadow is. The shadow of the cube is the light of the 4D cube.
Wow. It's a mind fuck.
Yeah. Something to think about.
What do we got next? How would you say that if you do or if you want to, how do you limit the suffering of others? And is that even a goal for you?
I don't really think it's a goal for me. I really just kind of worry about myself right now and know that I don't have the energy and the output to do as much as I feel like I would want to do.
Because it's a privilege to be able to.
In a weird way, yeah. Right?
It's a privilege to be able to help, and it's a privilege to be able to not have to help. They're kind of the same branch of the same tree. Just like when you see people volunteering at, like, shelters and everything, it's like, that's because they can afford that time.
Yeah.
And it's so sad that we live in a generation where it's like, that is even the case. That yeah. It's like, only people with the privilege to help or with money or stable financial, anything. It's like, that's when you can go help and volunteer time. But most of the people who need the help, it's like, they want to help, but they can't because they have to help themselves.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the whole comfortability thing. If I don't go and do this extra shift at work and I don't have this extra money to store and save for maybe what might happen, you know, then I can't. I will not be okay.
Yeah.
So I can't go out. Also, this is a new thought, so it's probably going to sound clunky and rough, but I'm going to try explaining
it. Yeah, throw it out.
It's a privilege to help. Is it a privilege to be helped?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, there's people that just have an ego where it's like, I'm going to do this on my own. Even if you're at the worst, at rock bottom, and people can see it and understand it. It all comes down to if you would like to be helped.
I think that's also a privilege to not have to be helped as well.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? That, like, really all these things kind of exist within privilege themselves on different levels.
But, I mean, I'm just going to relate it all back to an endless cycle.
Yeah.
It's a privilege to help or to not be helped, and then it's a privilege to receive the help.
And also not have to receive
the help. And then not have to receive the help. And then if you, yeah, it just, if I drew this out right now, I could think about it and just actually, but I, you know what I mean? You could see it. It's always just ask the inverse.
So maybe in that being, since it's privileged to essentially do all those things, again, it falls back into where we started. Like, it is just a privilege to exist and to just be, even though a lot of people don't think that. A lot of people see the pessimistic side and the suffering, and they're overwhelmed with that suffering. But it's in the argument, it is a privilege to suffer, even though it sucks.
Maybe it's just not. Well, I mean, it's, you get something out of it. Like, every time I'm in, like, a hard spot, like, it's not in, like, just what can I learn from this?
Yeah.
And the sooner you learn it, the sooner you're more likely to get out of that spot.
But then you get, like, the arguments of, like, oh, so why did my parent die of cancer? Why did the Holocaust happen?
Right.
And it's like, these are terrible things, but, like, again, you look at the aspect of the whole, like, things did come out of these things. Even though they are terrible and there probably was a lot of suffering, something comes out of it, you know? Yeah. It had to happen.
I said this for a while. You have to have good in the world to have... Or so you have to have evil in the world to have good. If everything is good, nothing is anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just...
Yeah.
It's unfortunate to say, too. And that kind of contradicts what I've been saying, too, about, like, none of this really matters, and we're all just going to do it forever. But maybe it's like the good will create the evil. The evil will then create the good.
Yeah. It's that balance that we were talking about.
Yeah. So what creates an imbalance?
That's a great question.
And is there ever even an imbalance, or is it just that's part of what's going to happen?
I think it's both. And I think what would, if anything, and this is just me throwing it out there, this is not an absolute or my end understanding of it, but, like, probably the in-between understanding of these things, like us trying to decide what is good and what is bad, I think that's what causes the imbalances, is that, like, to believe that one thing is good or one thing is bad. Like, a murderer believes that murder is good.
Yeah.
But most of us, like, if that's your family or friend that they killed, then yeah, you're going to believe that's bad, you know? Or suicide. In some social cultures and stuff, suicide was the highest honor.
Yeah.
Like, to go out into battle and die for, like Vikings and stuff, like, yeah. Or Spartans. Like, it was the highest honor to die in war. But to your son that's in Afghanistan right now, that's totally bad. Like, you don't want that to happen.
Well, it depends on what the war is being fought for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where the imbalance happens, of trying to decide what is good and what is bad. though in the doings of, because they have to happen, that's where we figure it out, you know. That's where, like, it's just the natural science of things happen and the philosophy. And when we observe them, it's like, okay, that's when we can decide, like, more so this fits where on the spectrum. But again, it's still subjective entirely to each perceptive viewpoint from anyone and everything. And that's why humans have it so, like, it's so difficult for us to decide these things. It's like, good and bad are just human constructs. Kind of, in a way. The biggest example that I give, and I've probably said it in every episode of this podcast, is that, like, when a meteor hits a planet, or, like, a giant asteroid, it's neither good or bad. It's bad for us if it destroys our planet, yeah. But in the universal scale of things, it's neither good or bad. It's just right. An event that happens.
So your parents dying of cancer means nothing in the grand scheme of things.
In the grand scheme of things, yeah. It has that 0.00001%. To you and to the surrounding things, yes, it has immaculate effect. But overall, it's like, it was this a good or bad event? It's still under, it's under eternal subjectiveness. Like, is it, was that a bad event for the ants outside? You know, was that a bad event for the leaves that we're sitting under right now? You know, was that good or bad? You know, it is almost impossible to say. You know, we could, like, I mean, like, I'm sure a lot of people would be like, no, this branch had nothing to do with the death of someone's parents, and it probably doesn't care. But, like, again, they are interconnected somehow, especially in this conversation. Now we've connected that even further.
Yeah. I think imbalances are necessary. And, yeah. But I also think that it's like when you spin a top, centrifugal motion keeps it going. But you ever tried spinning it at first, you see it hits the surface, and it's not perfectly spinning yet. When it hits, it's lopsided. And then it brings itself around, yeah, and then it pulls itself straight.
Mm-hmm.
But then it stays straight. And then eventually that will stop until someone picks it up and does it again. So it's the imbalance that keeps it going.
Kind of.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if it's also, if you're like, another one, if you ever looked at like a fan spinning, or maybe a fan would be the most obvious one, or a car wheel. But if you look at a fan spinning, if you're on your back and you're looking at a ceiling fan and it's on the highest setting, and you know when you start to count the fan blade and then you try following it as long as you can and then it's just gone. And then after a while it looks like it's just one big whoosh. It's just one big blur. When you look away for a second, you look back. Don't move your head. Just move your eyes and look back. You'll see the one fan blade.
Yeah. And when you follow it in the circle.
Well, not even following it. You're staring at the one thing, and you look away, and then you look back in that general location of the blur. You will see a fan blade. You'll see it where it stopped. You'll see it. And if you haven't done it before.
I get what you mean.
Yeah. And I think that's just what, that's just where we're always at in life. Is when we look away for a second from what's actually happening, and then we go, what? And that's when you notice the difference in something. But we're always the fan spinning.
We're all of the above.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain all that because it's all really phenomenology. It's just this phenomenon that each of us experiences in a completely different way through a different set of eyes, through a different set of structuralism and everything, you know. And so, again, that's where, like, that's what excites me about the idea of being a further understanding of, like, of just being able to imagine, like, if you and I were just sitting here and instead of having this whole conversation, we just, like, were able to have it in, like, split seconds, like the speed of thought, you know, like, where would that take humanity? And then also, like, imagine being able to do that with animals and creatures and maybe even plants, you know, just living things, atoms, like being able to literally connect with funk. And just, like, experience the universe as itself. And then, like, that's when humans essentially, like, become the gods that they've always described. You know, like, because it is, it's an entirely possible thing.
Yeah. That's interesting, too, of the animals. It's like, you want to be able to understand them and relate to them and just be, I don't know, coherent with them. Maybe we've got to the point where we at one point could with them. And then something happened and we evolved in separate paths. So now we can't. But then we're starting to train animals and ourselves and our own minds and their minds and make, you know, technology to help us. And we're starting to come back in. And then we will. And then something maybe happens again. In the future. And it's just always in and out.
So here's a thought that I had about a year or two back of like, so you know the story of the Tower of Babel, right?
You'd have to remind me quickly, but yeah.
So the story of the Tower of Babel was that these people were building a tower to heaven, right?
Yeah.
And they were getting pretty close, and either God or the gods up there were like, no, y'all aren't ready for this yet. And so they basically cursed them with language. And now they all spoke different languages suddenly. And they couldn't communicate with each other to continue building this thing because no one could understand each other. They each spoke a different language. And so let's say that that was a real event, right?
Yeah.
Now we're to the point where with technology and with communication and language and knowledge, we're beginning to understand each other again.
Yep.
We're learning how to, like, take every language and understand it. And so now we're, again, building this tower up to the heavens. Who's to say that they, once again, just, like, don't be like, nope.
Right.
But imagine, like, that maybe we do make it this time. Maybe, like, we begin to understand, because they already did it again, maybe we were prepared for it. It's like, oh, even if you were to divide our languages, now we have the technology to learn any other new language or anything. And so I think we're kind of there in that moment of, like, we've had so much time and knowledge and study. But other things separate that, like capitalism, consumerism, fascism.
Yeah, but I think with the people that don't understand how to speak technology, like the older generations, that's still one of those. Like, we're getting to less and less of these Tower of Babel languages. And now we're getting closer and closer to being one. Back to, like, okay, we all understand what's going on, but you still have these people that don't have access to it or don't understand it.
Yeah.
Or the people have to come.
Yeah. And also the people that are being taken advantage of with that technology as well. Again, the thesis versus the antithesis. Really, we've talked about most of the questions that I have. The last one that I have, so what I call funk awareness is these moments that I can describe as like when you kind of precognizantly predict reality or you feel reality, you really notice reality. Like, have you ever been thinking of a person and suddenly they call you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Talking something into existence.
Too. Exactly. Kind of a manifest. Yeah. That's kind of what I call funk awareness.
Okay.
Because you're connecting into funk, essentially. And you're kind of like causing this algorithm to happen.
Yeah.
Weirdly. It's this phenomenon, you know? And it's either coincidence or something. Can you recall the last time you experienced a moment of that?
It probably been something simple, like just thinking about someone and then they called or texted right away.
Yeah.
Just like that's really
wild. I think that's the most common one.
It's probably the most common in this culture right now. Yeah, I don't know.
Yesterday, I had one where we were talking about, for some reason, I can't remember the initial cause of it, but the book Amelia Bedelia came into conversation.
Okay.
And then in one of the games that we played, a rhyming game, the name Cecilia got mentioned in the audience, and we took the suggestion, and now we had to rhyme with Cecilia. Mm-hmm. And one of the players used Amelia Bedelia.
Right.
And it's like, if that had never happened, then that funk connection would have never happened. If we had never mentioned it before, and so for some reason it got mentioned and then brought up again.
So that kind of goes back, to remind me, I have a better funk connection. But that also reminds me of when I was talking about when you're having a conversation with someone and they just go, I'm just going to find out the answer right now. You just Google it right away. That puts the end of that funk connection then.
Both. I think it kind of adds to it a little bit.
If you can have another conversation after that, but that's just a jagged edge, you know? It's not like you couldn't just keep on going and have a smooth or more pleasant conversation if you just never looked up
whatever it was. Because I think where it falls into is, say now you look up the answer, or you don't look up the answer. Right. Like, it goes both ways. I think that conversation would come up again eventually, like whether it's tomorrow or you know, 5 years from now. And then you think back to that moment it happened and you recall it and you're like, that's right. We had this discussion and I remember the moment. Yeah. And that's the funk connection between that. But you had a better funk connection.
Yeah, it's more the manifesting portion of it, though. What did you have a different name for that before?
Funk awareness.
Funk awareness. This happens to me way more than someone just calling and texting me after I thought about it. A song will play. And it was literally the song I was just thinking about happening. Mm-hmm. And that happens probably once a day.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know, and it's not like I listen to a playlist where it's like, there's only 10 songs on here.
Yeah.
I'll listen to anything. I can be listening to radio, mm-hmm. and this will pop up. And I'm like, that's insane. This is what... Maybe I only thought about that, though, because I'm remembering this time I was here last.
In the loop. Yeah.
And I knew this song would play next.
So, two things. One, I have a playlist of, like, 11,000 songs that I use as, like, a kind of... you'll get your own playlist when I get home. It's kind of like a audio tarot.
Okay.
But, like, I talked about this in a couple podcasts ago, when I really started putting together my thoughts of the funk and everything, was during a night where I had this playlist on, and I was meditating. And essentially, like, what started happening was, again, it's so difficult to describe because it was almost like I was connecting with the funk, and it was connecting back. And when I was having thoughts of, like, I was connecting everything. Like, I had been in this investigation of, like, life in the universe. Like, that's been kind of a goal of since I was a kid, of just finding the meanings of life, philosophy, and everything. And I was sitting there meditating, and the music was just, like, if I had a thought, and I was just, like, kind of, like, stuck on it or, like, questioning it, suddenly the song that was playing would just answer it, like, almost instantly.
Yeah.
It would, like, the lyric would just, like, you know, have the right word or phrase that, like, kind of, like, it was speaking. Or the way that the audio, like, amped up would, like, be going almost as if it was composing to the thoughts in my head. And every time I would open my eyes with a question or something like that, it was literally on my computer screen. Like, I would look straight ahead, and there was the next, like, thing. It was such a crazy phenomenon that I've never been able to experience since. And what's weird, and I know this is all conspiracy, really, but what's weird is, like, I had been, like, training myself up to that point of being able to connect into this, and once I got COVID, I haven't been able to do it since.
That's really funny that the COVID conspiracy ties into another conspiracy of, like, essentially remote viewing.
Yeah, and awareness.
Yeah.
And because literally, like, once I got COVID, it's like, this third eye that I had been connecting into for, which again, it's just my own thoughts. It's my own perception and thoughts. And I know for, like, some people out there, this external, what I'm describing is like, oh, you sound crazy. And I understand that. Yeah. It is weird. It is a phenomenon that I'm trying to describe to other people that no one will ever understand what I mean except myself. But again, once I got COVID the first time, it's like it closed off. It's like it just literally blacked out and was like, you can't connect to this anymore.
Yeah. Well.
Though I've been getting better at it.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's almost like collateral damage with it. That's like, what is it? If you had smallpox, you're immune to shingles. Is that what that is?
They're the same thing, yeah.
Are they are the same thing?
Kind of.
But they're, okay, so they're
similar. They're both the herpes disease.
Okay, is that what that is? Okay. But it's something like that. Like, you would never have had shingles, but you're never going, because they're classified as two different things. I guess shingles would be the more modern, even though it's not as modern, but the more modern than smallpox. But either way, it's like, oh, I don't have to worry about that because this happened.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you're working on this, and you had this to fix this, and then unfortunately this got fixed also.
Yeah.
That is crazy, though.
But it is weird. But I made that. I turned the playlist of that night. I had the what I call the parability playlist, because that's the word that really came to me in this meditation, was parability, of just being able to be there with each other, being able to provide for each other and cohabitate. Just parability. I don't know how to further describe it. Like, it's just being there for each other.
Yeah.
And I took the playlist, and I have an album. One of my albums is called Parability. And essentially what it is you take the playlist and you play the album at the same time. And it's like kind of a bunch of sounds and music in the background, and then also the songs from that playlist and then they're just combined together. And it's just an experience.
Does it sound like nonsense for the first bit of it?
No, because you're hearing, like, it opens with an Animal Collective song. And so you're basically listening to music, but in the background there's what's my album is. And which kind of is, like, if you kind of listen to it by itself, yeah, it might be a little nonsensical, but there is some, you know, you get the sense of it. You'd have to experience it for yourself.
Well, I think we all experience it in real time, where it's like you're in line in traffic in a turn lane, and everyone's turn signals line up at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And it happens. Yeah. Or the DVD screensaver.
When it hits the corner.
It double bounces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just showcasing that. And I think that as we progress through, and now that... how do I explain this? Like, once you get the word for something, it's like a confirmation bias. You see it more often. You experience it more often, right?
Yeah, it's when you buy a new car, you see that car everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. And so now, in phenomenology, what I have been experiencing is the funk more often. And I notice it with other people as well when I discuss it and stuff. And I see that people also notice it more. And now that there's a word for it.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, is kind of my thesis on philosophy, is this funk theory. And that's kind of where I'm expanding into and approaching. And it really is a crazy journey. It really is.
Let me double down on that. That's like when I was mentioning the small political ballots, where they don't put the name and what they side they're on. They just tell you what it is. It's like the same thing of conspiracy theories, because that's just anything we ever say could be a conspiracy theory. If you just label it conspiracy theory, then automatically it's a bad rep.
Yeah.
So if you just explained it without starting by, I'm kind of into this, this conspiracy theory. If you just go into the explanation, or maybe you have something that's more tangible or relatable, and then you go into that, and you remove the whole, and then you're just like, what do you think about that? And they're like, well, that's actually this.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, holy crap. It's when you remove that stuff, you know? If you made the word for it, you've made several words, the parability and the funk awareness.
Yeah.
But it's also how you could explain it before you even gave the word.
Yeah.
I think that's where you would have more people. And you said you've been able to relate more, and you said your journey is kind of crazy with this whole thing. But I think everyone can... everyone has... I mean, it's... everything's perspective and relation, so everyone has their own journey, too. But that's why horoscopes are so appealing to people. It's like, well, yeah, they're super vague.
Yeah. But they relate.
But they relate to everyone. Yeah. So all this stuff does relate to everyone at the same time.
And once you... figure out those ways to relate, you just see it more and more, you know. And in my experience, after the parability night, that's when I really started writing it down and composing my treatise of what this is and what's going on and everything. And I remember at first, I was just trying to get it all out, and I was very excited. It's like when you let's say you won the lottery. And you're super excited about it. You're trying to tell all these people, oh, this thing happened, you know. Or imagine, you were Moses and you saw the burning bush. Imagine explaining that to people. Yeah. The excitement that, you must feel experiencing this thing. Let's say you saw a UFO. Let's say you actually saw a UFO, you had contact with aliens. Trying to relay that experience to someone, right?
Yeah.
How difficult that must be. Almost impossible. Will people believe this or not? And so, what I've been experiencing trying to explain this phenomenon of funk was, at first, so many people just didn't get it. I saw that there were glimpses, small moments of people be like, okay, I get what you're saying. But now, especially that I've been diving into it and discussing it with more and more people, I see this right here, that you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's almost again, tell me if I'm wrong. But it seems that, it's almost an... epistemology is the study of knowledge. Okay. And there's few things that we actually know 100%. Universal know. We know that a triangle has three sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know that 1 + 1 = 2.
Okay.
We know that we're probably going to die. We know that we're hungry, that we need to eat and drink. And we know that we exist. Or at least we don't know in what way... but we know that we're here in this moment and that we're thinking. And even if, as Renee, I can't remember his last name now. Famous philosopher. Essentially, like, if even if like our experience right now was under manipulation, like let's say a demon was controlling this experience and just making us live this, right?
Okay.
We still know that we're experiencing it.
Yeah.
And so, in my understanding, funk theory is almost a theoretical epistemological knowledge. Even though I can't prove it, that's why I say theoretical.
Yeah.
It is, it's this thing that constructs all these things. And it is literally the, like I said, the construction of existence and what existence exists within.
Yeah. There's a... I think it's the only theory you can't disprove just because it's kind of like a fail-safe. Is it called Tuesdayism?
Go on.
Or Thursdayism? Is that everything that's ever been was created last Thursday.
Oh, yeah, you can't disprove it.
You can't disprove it. Because people are like, well, we have books and knowledge. I'm like, well, we were created with those books looking like that and with our knowledge already like this.
But you could also disprove it because, I mean, like, we have calendars and...
But we were made with those calendars.
But not last Thursday.
Could be.
No, because there were two Thursdays ago.
Right, but those calendars that were made just had Thursdays on them already.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't disprove it, though. Everything that was ever made could have been made. It doesn't have to be Thursday, but last Thursday, you know? Or this Thursday was, what, 4 days ago now?
Yeah.
Everything was made on that Thursday. And then we were just, we had this knowledge. I knew I was coming out to Houston on Saturday, but I was made with that knowledge, made and programmed. So,
determinism.
I guess, but... It's like the one, I'm just trying to stay like with the one theory you can't disprove, and it's kind of like with your funk thing too. It's like, well, it's everything is the funk.
That, and I remember when I first I had an open forum on it, and that's what one person said was like, yes, this is almost entirely hard to disprove because it encompasses everything. Like
yeah.
Everything would be constructed of it. So then, yeah, like, but again, I think that that's why I'm trying to talk to more people about it, because I am looking more for the disproval. How do we break this down and not prove it to further prove other things? What comes next, you know?
Well,
that's the scientific and philosophy of it. Like, I don't want to be right. Like, I just want to know more, you know?
Sure.
And it seems that this is where I'm at so far, because it's just a quest for knowledge and expansion of it. And again, with determinism, if you argue in its favor, then this was always going to happen. And that's kind of something that came to me in that moment of parability, was that, like, I can't say it was a voice or anything, because it was myself telling me these things, but it was kind of like I was connected into the universe, and it was connecting to me that, like, you're going to do these things no matter what. And I don't know. It really was just such a experience that probably will never happen again.
Have you ever heard the theory too that a circle is not actually flat or smooth and rounded?
Oh yeah, no, yeah, just like I think it was like if you were to draw like a circle around the planet using like gravity, it's gonna have like all these bumps in it and everything, like going up and down. And like if you were to place a ball on it at any point, like at no point is it ever flat.
Okay. But
go on back on.
Well, you can visually see topography, so that's how I'm picturing it. Like, you pull in.
No, like, even outside, like the atmosphere.
Okay, sure. It's more like if you look at a hexagon, right?
Yeah.
You can see that it's got six sides.
Yeah.
And that they're all flat. All right, yeah. And then it's what? Is it a heptagon? Is that the next one? Seven-sided? Octagon? Yeah. I don't remember after that. There's decagon.
Nonagon. Decagon.
Decagon, whatever. Dodecagon. You keep going, but the more sides you add to it, the smoother it'll start to look.
Yes, eventually.
If you add 3,000, it's got to be a number.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely, they're so small. But, I mean, as you keep zooming in, you're always going to see that's not flat.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're at in life. That's just life in general.
We're zooming in.
Yeah, and then if you look out, so like that's where you see the linear timeline. People are like, no, you're born, you die, you live in between that. Right? Yeah, but then if you zoom out, you see that it's smooth, it's round, it's always going to be like this. That your timeline's actually this.
Yeah.
You know, circular. And the more time that elapses, or the more that things happen, the more of those sides you're going to get.
Yeah.
An easier way would be a pizza. And you cut it into 6 slices.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you can take it, you can take a slice out, and you can rearrange it and keep moving it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the same thing over and over again.
Just a different pizza. It is both the same and a different pizza.
And that's how I think this loop is.
Yeah.
That's just everything.
Yeah.
The loop is essentially the Thursdayism, where you can't really disprove it, because it's just perspective. Where are you looking at it right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we actually went over time.
It was a good conversation.
It was a great conversation. Do you have any last thoughts? I guess one last thing sure. is what is on your mind right now? Like, where has all this led you? What is your first thought? What is your funk connection?
I want pizza right now.
Yeah.
Just the whole time I'm thinking about this circle and pizza. I don't know. It's cool that I cross paths with someone else. You explain things in different ways, but at the end of it, we're kind of both like, yeah.
Understanding. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was predetermined. Like, we were always going to essentially meet.
Yeah. And then we will never meet.
Yeah. I think that's such a crazy phenomenon.
Yeah. It's all possibilities, and I think that's cool. And I don't know. It's the same thing. It's remove the names from the ballot, remove the sides. You can relate because it's the same things.
Yeah, you're the same funk. Just be with each other.
Yeah, and it's easier to relate to someone if it's a circle where there's no end and no beginning. It's just you go right into it, or you're already into it, and you just relate to things. Versus this is what it looks like. This is an aggressive shape. You can see the beginning and the end, you know? So it's just cool to see someone else, and it's just kind of... I mean, I've thought things out. I've never referred to this as the loop theory, but I think I'm going to at this point now.
Yeah.
For the search.
You have a further understanding of...
Yeah, I just got the time to talk it out, so I'd appreciate that. And it's very cool to see a similar mind as well in that sense. There's things that you believe in that I don't know, and there's things that I believe in that you don't know.
Exactly.
But, it's the fact that we got to sit down and have this conversation and just talk it out, and I thought it was very... It was interesting the entire time.
Yeah, that's what expands the funk, and we're teaching it to understand itself, and it's going to lead us into the next funk connection. And if you ever experience like another funk awareness, either from this moment or like something else, let me know
because
kind of what I'm going for in my quote unquote research, because I need examples and things, but because I know people experience them, and it's the more that like I can showcase these things, the more that I can relate that information to the future. And so
absolutely.
Cody, thanks for being on, man.
Dude, thanks for having me.
Plugs.
At Myers Cody on everything that matters in my life. You'll just find me everywhere.
Myers Cody, that's Venmo, PayPal.
Everything.
Everything.
Everything I have.
Instagram,
is
Twitter.
Yep. All of that.
All right. Well, Cody, thanks again for being on.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening. Love you.